In the ever-constant tug-of-war between development and environmental concerns on North Carolina's Outer Banks, both sides could almost certainly agree that no matter the state of things now, there's certainly better than one vision for the area around 1950.
NC Highway 12 has changed the face of the Outer Banks, influenced life there for residents, and made visitation possible in ways hardly dreamed of in years gone by. It has enriched the region and the state, eased the travel needs of locals, and brightened the lives of countless tourists. Equally important, the highway forestalled plans to turn the Outer Banks into a radioactive nuclear wasteland, and for that alone, it deserves some respect.
Dawson Carr, reading from the tail end of his book, NC-12, Gateway to the Outer Banks, a history of the road that brought the communities of the Outer Banks together. His reference to radioactive nuclear wasteland isn't hyperbole about what progress has wrought. It's about the Outer Banks existing as an actual nuclear wasteland if government ideas for use of the barrier islands had come to fruition.
It showed that the military was interested in using the Outer Banks back in the late 40s and early 50s to replace the Marshall Islands as a test site for their nuclear weapons. They thought nobody lived there, and it was the perfect spot. It was away from land, and it would be perfect for blowing up their nuclear bombs. But when the director of the Atomic Energy Commission had pictures made, he started looking at those, and he saw that there was a road there. He didn't think there was anything there, and he saw a road, and that road had led to development of the area, and a whole lot of business had sprung up, and people had moved there, and he said, this is no place for atomic testing. So they had to move their testing site out to Nevada.
Dawson Carr talking about Project Nutmeg, which in 1948 rated the Outer Banks highly as a site for nuclear testing. Ultimately, the U.S. government opted elsewhere, the western United States, where they already owned the land that would become the Nevada testing site. But if not for Highway 12, which brought some ease of travel along the Outer Banks, the region could have been a much less inviting place. And if you try to trace the genesis of Highway 12, Carr suggests a precise date, December 17th, 1903, the birth date of powered flight.
A few people came out there on weekends for dances and things like that, but very few people lived out there and very few came to visit. But once the Wright brothers made their flight, that was world famous. And the Outer Banks became world famous, and then everybody wanted to come. The trouble was they couldn't get there. There were no bridges, and there were no roads on the islands once they got there. So that had to be countered before the Outer Banks could become anything. But it was truly the Wright brothers' flight that served as a catalyst for the road and for the development of the Outer Banks.
Not that the Wrights flew on December 17, 1903, and pavements started being laid the following morning. Initial roads were roads only in the strictest sense. They started somewhere and ended another. Carr's book, NC-12, Gateway to the Outer Banks, features a photo just inside the cover of a car traversing one of these roads, sand that had developed ruts from drivers that were augmented to ease travel, leaving what almost looks like a railway for automobiles.
They had to travel between roads, and a few people on the Outer Banks actually bought cars, and although they were hard to use out there with all the sand, they had to travel between towns, and they made ruts in the sand, which tended to be somewhat permanent after a while, but there were still ruts in the sand. So to help cars pass and travel, they put boards in the rut and made a kind of a boarded road, and the people could ride on those.
While the initial roads share little in what today's roads look like, the promise of Highway 12 then was pretty much the same as now, a conduit to keep area economies chugging along. And this notion crystallized around 1925 as area leaders began to face a problem that remains true today, a decline in the fisheries industry.
And the oyster beds had been over-harvested, and things were just going downhill. And so the Dare County Commissioner said, we've got to do something to save the economy of the Outer Banks. And what they decided to do was put a bridge between Roanoke Island and Nag's Head. And they went to the state and asked the state to help. And North Carolina just didn't have that much interest in the Outer Banks at the time, like a lot of other people. And they declined the chance to put a bridge. And so the Outer Bankers, being what they are, they said, well, we'll just do it ourselves. And they did. They passed a bond issue for $300,000. And they built a two-mile bridge that led from Roanoke Island over to Nag's Head, and that changed the future of the Outer Banks forever.
State government also had no interest when a few years later in 1930, a bridge from the Elizabeth City area to Kitty Hawk was constructed, a privately paid-for toll bridge. but eventually the state got involved. Dawson Carr speculates a little embarrassment went a long way in that decision, as first local government and then local businesses successfully completed what the state had deemed an unnecessary expenditure to connect sparsely populated areas.
They were toll bridges, and they were so many cars were crossing them that the people in North Carolina government saw that and said, hey, you know, maybe we needed to build those bridges there after all. So they bought the two bridges from the private enterprises and took them over. And in fact, eliminated the tolls, which was a good thing. And then people could come to the Outer Banks free. And after they bought the two bridges, or actually before they bought them, they decided to pave a roadway between the ends of the two bridges, which was through the Nags Head Kitty Hawk area. And that area evolved very quickly.
In fits and starts, soon the Outer Banks was connected, with Highway 12 stretching from Corolla in the north to Ocracoke Island at the south. And nature has intervened many times over the lifetime of the highway. New Inlet has opened and closed many times in recorded history, and the fact there's a road there now that wasn't in the 1700s didn't dissuade the inlet north of Rodanthe from reopening when Hurricane Irene struck in 2011. The road, once ignored by the state, now continuously gets rebuilt by the state when these types of events occur, something which irks those who, as Dawson Carr writes, believe that the highway and its maintenance interfere with the natural processes that have nourished and restored the barrier island chain throughout its existence. That argument will probably continue, even with an agreement that has been reached to replace the Bonner Bridge in a manner to provide some protection to the Outer Banks Pea Island Refuge. Dawson Carr sees the site of the highway's detractors, but ultimately believes it serves a valuable purpose.
I don't know if it's progress or not, but I like the fact that the road is there because people can come and see all the beauty of the Outer Banks and visit those historic sites and the wilderness areas that are there. And to me, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and if no one is there to behold it, there's no beauty. So I can't see just maintaining the Outer Banks if nobody has access to them. So my opinion is that the highway should be there and has served a good purpose. Of course, I don't live out there, so that's an external opinion.
Dawson Carr taught for 27 years at Sandhills Community College in Moore County. He is the author of NC-12, Gateway to the Outer Banks, which is published by the University of North Carolina Press. I'm George Olson.